October is spooky season, and if you're a fan of all things horror like myself, let me give you some great news. Director Mike Flanagan is back with another Netflix thriller, The Midnight Club. The show is based off of the popular young adult horror series by author Christopher Pike. It follows the story of Ilanka, an 18-year-old girl diagnosed with terminal cancer. She decides to enroll at a hospice care facility specifically for young people called Brightcliff. That's where she meets the Midnight Club.
So, you guys sneak into the library every night and...
make ghosts.
Tell stories.
Make ghosts sounds way better. You tell a story, you're giving birth to a new ghost, because...
that's all any of us are in the end.
Mike Flanagan joins us now. Welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. I'm thrilled to be here.
And I am so excited about this. I just gotta say that on the air. Can you introduce us to The Midnight Club and what they're all about?
Sure. So The Midnight Club is based on a book I read when I was in high school by Christopher Pike. If you were into... horror very young as a reader, you started with R.L. Stein.
Yes.
And then you kind of graduated to Christopher Pike.
Yeah.
And then if you kind of stuck with the genre, you were off to Stephen King after that.
Yes, exactly. That sounds about right.
Oh, yeah. And it was such a formative part of my life. And The Midnight Club was one that really kind of hit me in the heart and dealt with death and mortality in a way that I was not expecting to be confronted with at that age. This is my kind of nostalgic attempt to dig into what got me into horror in the first place.
And yeah, and so you go all over the place. You got stories about kind of magic. You got stories about serial killers. And these are the ghost stories that they're telling each other and that the actors themselves then play in these reenactments of these stories.
Right. And the hope is that a lot of these stories connect kind of to what these kids are going through at the hospice, that we get to know who they really are based on how they craft their stories. And I loved that thematically, because for a show focused on death, you know, regardless of what any of us think happens after we die, the one thing no one can argue with is that we all become stories. And so kind of being the author of your own story in life becomes very important to these kids because they have so little time left.
You know, the thing about a hospice setting, it's like, well, I'm much more scared of a natural death than a supernatural death in books and in media and in life, let's be real. Why do you think that is, like that different type of fear?
When it's more fantastic, when you talk about a supernatural death, you know, it's easier to kind of tap into it as entertainment. Mm. It's easier to separate that from a potentially realistic outcome for ourselves. You know, when you talk about disease, you talk about things that people are dealing with in great numbers every day. Mm. You know, that there's something that's much more frightening about that because it's so plausible. And one of the things that struck me with this story was how many people in our cast and crew were coming forward telling us their stories, dealing with terminal diseases, losing people too young. It was remarkable to me just how universal this experience turned out to be. There's something beautiful about that, because where else but fiction can we really safely explore the things that scare us the most?
Did that complicate the way you tapped into the more traditionally scary elements of this show?
Definitely. It kind of upends the entire engine of the genre elements, because typically in horror, the backbone of the whole thing is, are these people going to live? Mm. Are they going to survive? Mm-hmm. And for a story like this, you know, the outcome's predetermined. We're told from the very first episode that, you know, these characters are here because they're dying imminently. And how you approach the horror of that becomes more about, you know, the horror of not living fully before you die, the horror of not knowing where you're going. It really becomes a show more about life than about death.
What really becomes the thrust of the show is what does it mean to love someone who's dying? Do yeah. you accept the loss or do you fight it with everything you have? Heather Langenkamp's character tells the kids, like, how are you going to feel if you spend so much time fighting that you don't even get time to say goodbye?
It's one of the most complicated questions I've ever been lucky enough to kind of explore in a piece of work before. And Heather actually wrote that line herself that you're referencing. And Heather Langenkamp knows about this in a very profound way. And she and her husband very tragically lost their son to glioblastoma when he was in his early 20s. Mm. I think that's really the heart of the show is the language we use when it comes to disease and cancer and fight, 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 I'm going to fight. You know, this is a show about when is the right time to fight, how to fight with love, and when it's okay to leave the battlefield. All of those things are, you know, are not the typical questions that you find yourself wrestling with when you're dealing with kind of the more by-the-numbers horror content.
You know, going back to the more traditional scares, I understand that you just broke a Guinness Book of World Records for most jump scares in the show. A character actually references this. It gets a little meta and tells another character in the show, like, don't be lazy. Being startled is not the same thing as being scared. Now, what do you think about the jump scare? Do you think there's a difference between being startled and being scared?
There's a fundamental difference between being startled and scared. And the Guinness thing is really funny to me because I am not the filmmaker who likes jump scares. Okay. I think they can be.
But you had a jump scare in The Haunting of Hill House. My heart has still not come back down from that jump scare that you did. I think my blood pressure is still up from that one. So I didn't know you didn't like jump scares.
Well, I like them when there are some I love. Like there's, you know, one of the greatest all-time jump scares is in Jaws, and I love it. Or Exorcist 3 has an amazing, just out-of-your-seat jump scare that I adore. I think they're overused is really my point. It's not that I dislike them. I react very much to not the jump scare itself, but to the insistence that I get usually from executives that say, you know, you need to have a prescribed number of them and you need to have 5 jump scares in the first 15 minutes or else it's not scary. I just really wanted to kind of put it to rest, really. They were already saying, all right, well, let's get some jump. This is a YA show. Let's get some jump scares in there for the kids. And I finally was like, all right, fine. Here's all of them.
Yeah.
Here's so many jump scares that they'll be meaningless.
Yeah.
And we set a record. So now I've got this Guinness certificate.
Yes.
Which I think gives me the right. Next time I get the note where they say, we want extra jump scares, where I can say, well,
you've already broken the record.
Yeah, I've got the world record, and I don't think we need one here.
Is there a subgenre of horror that you haven't explored yet that you want to tackle in your next project?
I'd love to do cosmic horror. I'd love to do like something in the H.P. Lovecraft or Thomas Ligotti world, something that's really kind of existential and terrifying. I'd love to play just kind of within all the little corners. Like I'd love to do a werewolf movie. I'd love to do a story about witches.
I always love an exorcism.
Yeah.
And so if you want, I have ideas. If you want to talk, I have.
Absolutely.
Yeah, okay. Evangelical.
Exorcism stories are evergreen.
Evangelical, you know? Exorcism. A black evangelical exorcism.
That'd be awesome.
I'm giving away free ideas.
I think that's wonderful.
Come talk to me. We can make it work. Mike Flanagan is the director of The Midnight Club, which is streaming now on Netflix. Thank you so much for being with us.
Oh, thank you so much.